across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
I don't know that I'd go with Pat Breitlove. I'd go with Floyd R. Turbo, American. If anybody remembers the old Johnny Carson character, because Kristen Lyerly, Selena Heller, Greg Bach and Brittany Merlot are here, and one of you was foolish enough to ask, do you have any red, white, and blue gear? And I have this, basically, I stole a flag from a Perkins, and I turned it into a hoodie. And this is what I wear now for TikTok videos when I've got to represent a certain point of view, shall we say. Good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio. It is 7:07. Nice to have you here on this Wednesday, July 3rd, 2024. On this day in history, some crying, screaming baby boy was born. Hopefully a doctor is as professional as Dr. Lyerly brought him into the world and probably dropped him on his head. But
it was okay because he had a giant head of hair.
It was some old dude smoking a Chesterfield going, it's a boy.
Ah! It's a boy.
Thank him. Thank him.
Oh, this also comes in handy, this American flag hoodie, because today is American Redneck Day. This is also Air Conditioning Appreciation Day, International Plastic Bag Free Day, Fried Clams Day, Chocolate Wafers Day. Good Lord, not together, please. It's Independent Beer Run Day.
And
it's Start the Conversation Day, a day to check in with a loved one about their mental health. Don't be afraid to start a conversation about it. And finally, Greg, I know it's July 3rd, but it is still July.
Yeah.
It is still, what month is this? It's lasagna.
Oh, it's still
awareness month.
Lasagna awareness. Folks, Dr. Lyerly, Selena, Brittany, you and I, we talked about this yesterday. Are you aware of lasagna? Are you aware of it?
I'm aware that Costco has one, and I love to pick it up and just pop it in my
It's
oven,
really just a yes or no. We can't, yeah. Doctor, I don't mean to belie your credentials.
She's practicing for Congress. She wants to filibuster here.
Just want a yes or no answer here. Lasagna is around us, for us, by us, and sometimes within us. And it's just important to know that you need to be aware of lasagna in this July, the year of our Lord, 2024.
I wish whoever decided to name it Lasagna Awareness Month could appreciate how much they're being dragged for the entire month here on this fine radio show.
Wait, why July? Because who wants to heat up the kitchen?
That's exactly what I was thinking. But yes. I make lasagna in a slow cooker. I don't know the hell. I'm not making lasagna in July.
Hey, I have an idea. The lasagna people got together with the air conditioning appreciation people. You heat up the kitchen, you turn on the AC, you drive up those bills, and then everyone gets our money.
The conspiracy.
It's all connected somehow. Rob from Tigerton says, I have a red, white, and blue shirt. It says, make lawns great again. of course it does. In Tigerton, it's cloudy and 63. Another 1.1 inches of rain on Tuesday. I want to wish Pat a very happy birthday. I hope it is a great day. The song you should play on your bumper rotation is It's Raining Again by Supertramp. Which takes us to Brittany Merlot, because yes, the rain is going to continue to come down on people's plans for the fourth and the fifth, by and large?
I'm pretty much like, hey, we've got all these days off. Let's just have it rain, right? Yeah, Mother Nature, goodness. Long weekend, definitely going to be dampened here, especially on the fourth and the fifth. So we are looking at that rainfall moving in. So dry today. If you have any plans, you're good to go. It's going to be actually a little bit muggy as we head through the afternoon, mostly sunny and temperatures climbing anywhere from those low 80s to even the upper 80s. So feeling nice and summery, but then as soon as tomorrow, we are looking at clouds pushing in by the afternoon and some rain starting to roll in as well. You're looking at storm chances that could be strong to severe in the western parts of the state by tomorrow afternoon. Then they look to weaken as they push in and become more numerous statewide, but they could still be strong. They could still have some heavy downpours, and they are going to linger into our Friday as well. They start to scatter out and lessen out by Friday night. And then Saturday, we will see a mix of sun and clouds. but spotty showers and storms still linger on occasion throughout the afternoon on Saturday. And that's the case on Sunday too, unfortunately. So honestly, pack and expect and prepare for some sort of rain and storms to definitely hit you this weekend. Have a plan, unfortunately. Rainfall totals. Yeah, we've got 2 inches into some areas just yesterday. We've got another 1 to 2 inches expected again from Thursday night and then through our Friday. Right now, the heaviest hit looks like west, central Wisconsin areas, but again, it's who's underneath those storms. And the biggest chances for the storms, and as I'm looking at the firework timing and all of that right now, it does look like central Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, and it kind of stretches all through the south. So everyone's got a chance, and I hate saying that, but I know that they'll work around it. We'll have a good time anyways, and it doesn't matter. It's all about family, friends, and celebrating the nation's independence. So Sorry, Mother Nature, you can't ruin it.
And look, if people can push anything till Saturday or Sunday, then, you know, hopefully you get a better shot at better weather then.
Absolutely.
But we'll, you know, it is what it is, and we'll just make our plans accordingly. Greg's already altered his barbecue plans so that he can still get that grill working. So you roll with it. So
absolutely.
All right, Brittany, thank you. Have a great extended weekend. I'll see you next Monday.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Kristen and Selena continue with us here as well. Kristen is a candidate for Congress in the 8th Congressional District, which is why she talked about doing the parades and things this weekend. Your time is just basically no longer your own. But I loved what you were telling me before we started the segment about these smaller town parades, and I loved being in them as a candidate and a legislator myself. You just don't understand why somebody would say, I'd rather sit on a beach chair in Laguna Beach, California, than go to some small town parade. This is the heart of what summer is in some of these communities.
It means so much to these small communities. We were in Gresham last weekend, and it was beautiful. You know, we're throwing out candy, and we're talking to people, and these kids are there, and they're so excited. And you know what really got them excited? I knew that the guy throwing out the meat was right behind me when people really started to pep up. I mean, they're the funniest things that happen in these parades. Right. They're joyful, and they're delightful, and they're a blast.
Greg Bach has his hand raised.
Yes, throwing out meat.
The meat.
There were people dressed as cows and pigs, and they were throwing out wrapped meat and cheese.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So like gas station meat and cheese, not like, you know, here's a steak. Wha-pam! There's
no, like slices of bologna, and people really loved that. Like my Tootsie Rolls couldn't compare to a slice of bologna.
God, when they make fun of Wisconsin, it always makes sense.
But it's fun, and people were having a blast. I had a blast. I can't wait until tomorrow.
String cheese is always good.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yep. Our choice for parade candy was Starbursts, because you could throw a bunch of them in, they're individually wrapped like Tootsie Rolls, and the kids can scamper for it and, you know, not have too much, not have too little. We thought it was just the right thing. There was the year I was running against somebody, and you know, you can get your name or your logo stamped on pretty much anything now, and I don't know what possessed him to do this, but it was little packets of meat seasoning. And so you could hear him all up and down the route going, who likes meat? And then he'd throw a bunch of these packets. Who likes meat? And more of these packets gets get. And the kids are just kind of looking like, I'm not running for that. Where's the candy?
Butcher and public parade are the only places you can scream that. No one's going to be like, I should call the cops.
I'm not even sure that parade works for that. But so, Kristen, you along with the parades now, you've still got the four boys there. Are they all there? Anybody running away for the summer?
Lindsay's in the Dells right now with his friends doing the Noah's Ark thing. He, too, is disappointed by the weather. By the way, Brittany Merlot delivers a blow for the weekend, like terrible weather. Yeah. And then she ends with, but we'll make the most of it because we know how to do that. And we're cheerful. And it just, it negated all of the negativity for me. And I feel good.
I hear, I thought you were mocking somebody for having an uplifting personality. I'm like, pot kettle black over here. That's almost as close as I heard you come to complaining about something.
I mean, she laid it out there and then she made it okay.
The day I hear Dr. Lyerly go, they're a little cheery for my life. thinking. I'm gonna be like, I'm sorry. Have you been kidnapped and replaced by a robot?
That's when we'll know. So, I mean, same goes for Selena. There's a reason you guys do what you do, and how we're all the better off for it. So.
And we're on Mondays with you.
Yeah, that's true.
Monday mornings.
You're willing to do that much. Selena, are there, because my legislative district back in the day didn't include Eau Claire, it was like Chippewa Falls onward. Are there holiday activities that you're taking part in?
Oh gosh, well, I usually go to Chautauqua or back home, like Hatfield area. So Chautauqua has Liberty Fest. And I too did years of parades on floats, waving and smiling. Mm-hmm. And so I loved all of those parades.
It is really different if you're on a float or say dressed up like a mascot. It's really different when you're a candidate.
Oh, I'm sure the mascot was Goldie Gopher in parades.
Oh yeah, all the time with the band.
With that big old costume on.
How much were you sweating?
That's not a polite question to ask, Greg.
I'm sorry.
Listening.
I found bottom.
A lot. I was sweating a lot. It wasn't pretty, but it was so much fun.
Well, that's the whole
point. Can clean those, right? I was in a big...
I hope so.
The city Parks and Rec has a big Olaf costume that I borrowed once, and it just got back from the cleaners, and I was so afraid because he's white, and I was like, don't get Olaf dirty. But they cleaned it regularly, so that was... good.
And although the dry cleaning fumes in the head can be a little overwhelming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it gives me a headache.
I mean, nobody wants a dirty Olaf. My goodness. Yeah.
And if it's not a licensed concept, Olaf.
Oh, well, you guys, I really appreciate you helping me make sure that I didn't have to do any homework and actually talk about, you know, much that was too serious today. I'm saving that for Jim Santel in the next segment here. But, you know, thanks for letting me just be able to kick back for a bit. And promise me that even though we've got the actual Independence Day holiday tomorrow, promise me that next week none of you will be using the phrase, well, summer's almost done or summer's half over. Like, no.
Back
no, we got
to school
plenty of time.
Sales.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
That's coming. There'll still be time to bust out lasagna when the holiday is over.
Why?
That's a real patriot.
We're aware of it. Yes, we have an awareness of lasagna. All right, you guys have a great holiday weekend, and we'll see you back here. We'll do our usual stick on Monday, which, come to think of it, is a lot like this, which is why I'd love to do this twice a week. Thanks, you guys.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday! You.
We'll see you all later. Jim Santel is coming up next to talk about the end of the Supreme Court term. After this, you're up north. And it is my pleasure to welcome back to the program former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, also the host of Amicus every weekend, all about the latest legal issues. And there have been a lot of latest legal issues. Jim, good morning. How are you?
Pat, always a pleasure to be with you, even at a time when our country is wrestling, is it not, with some major things coming out of the Supreme Court, the least of which is this notion that they just announced this past week that presidents do, in fact, have some immunity for crimes committed in office.
It's so stunning. And I don't know that it's oversimplification to say that this is Nixon's revenge. You know, when Nixon said, well, if the president does it, it's not a crime.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of that, I often thought, too, as I'm looking through some of this opinion, which we will talk about, that there's also a portion of this in which the Supreme Court says that when it comes to the president reaching out to the Department of Justice and telling the Attorney General and others to engage in criminal conduct, as to that set of things in Donald Trump's indictment, there is absolute immunity. And it prompts me to think, gosh, Richard Nixon is calling. He wants his presidency back, right?
Yes.
He wants his presidency. But that's precisely the reason why Richard Nixon he resigned. Yeah. But basically thrown out of the White House because he was engaging in corruption with the Department of Justice and again, attempting to organize not only a conspiracy, but accomplish crimes from the White House with the Department of Justice. Our Supreme Court this past week said that presidents have immunity, absolute immunity for that issue. And again, others a little bit less clear. But on that point, reversing again what we've understood to be, frankly, almost half a century of understanding this country about right. what our president cannot do with the Justice Department.
No, the Justice Department was supposed to be very much off limits, and now the conservative justices gave them an absolute green light for this, which is just stunning, and frankly, does not pass what I would call the other shoe test, that if this were President Hillary Clinton, there is no way in hell that those same justices would find that same degree of immunity. I can say that with 100% certainty.
Right. Absolutely. Hillary Clinton, I believe the same could be said about my boss, Barack Obama, and others, obviously, in history, that would have prompted a very different result here. And once again, underscoring, Pat, as you and I have chatted, the politicization of this Supreme Court, that it shouldn't make a difference, right? Whatever they decide, and yet it would. This case, the other comment that I think your good thought there underscores is, and I've been wrestling with this, hyperbole, right? We tend to say this is the most significant thing that's happened. We talk about the most important elections in our time. This is awesome. This is catastrophic, all those kinds of things. And I've come to the conclusion, Pat, my friend, and for your listeners as well, this is hair on fire. This is absolutely hair on fire situation. It is of the top order. It is rescinding major portions, if not all, of the Constitution. And as one of our justices on the dissenting side said, they fear for the Republic, and it may well be the end, a beginning of the end of what we know as the United States of America. That is not hyperbole, although I've wrestled with this. I've read it several times. We've got a situation here where to speak in those terms is not hyperbolic. The American public, including your listeners, should know how serious this is as we again are in this week of celebrating our nation's 248th anniversary.
It's just a reminder again, and we can't say it enough, to guard against complacency, to say, oh, they just say those things, but, you know, it won't happen, whatever extreme action is. But the court has made it so much easier now for some kind of an extreme action to take place. Here's something I found was very interesting, or awkward, shall we say. The justices in repealing Roe v. Wade said, we don't see any explicit right to privacy. We don't see any explicit right to abortion care. But there's also no explicit right to presidential immunity. So apparently they just made that up.
Right, right. I think that's true. That's certainly true of a lot of the criticism of this opinion. And there is nothing in the Constitution, many concepts and phrases that are not in the Constitution. This is one of them. There is no such thing as immunity. And you can make the strong argument, Pat, as you have in other circumstances, and I have too, that just the opposite is true, that the entire corpus of the Constitution is a check and balance between the three branches of government, with the exception maybe of the pardon power, which also looms large in this particular issue, this particular situation. The whole notion of our republic is that there is not immunity, and there are situations where indeed one branch checks the other and makes certain that there are restraints on behavior by an executive. And the Supreme Court has said, again here, using this very peculiar made-up phrase now, presumptive immunity, mm-hmm. immunity. And that's the scary portion of this also, that sending this back now to the district court judge, there is a presumption that not only in the Department of Justice area, but four other areas identified in the indictment, that there is a presumption that the immunity applies, and the government, Jack Smith, has to prove otherwise in front of Tanya Chutkan. All of that completely made up out of whole cloth, out of the air, and now it's the law of the land.
It just so much for there. Somewhere out there are what you would call authentic originalists going, no, you guys can stop calling yourself originalists with something like this. Here's a question about recusal, especially based on the activity of their spouses. Should Justices Alito and Thomas have recused themselves from this case?
Yes, absolutely. And only because of what we have seen very recently with Justice Alito and Thomas, both of them connections and statements in the public domain by their spouses, by their partners. And again, is there benefit that will come to their spouses? Maybe direct, maybe indirect from this. Of course there should be, or there will be. And for that reason, you're looking perhaps not even so much at the actual conflict. It is the appearance, right, Pat, of impropriety. It's this notion that somehow my decision is being prompted by what my wife, my spouse, is telling me, what she is advocating for. With respect to Ginny Thomas, a strong advocacy about the 2020 election, all of that. We've got recently Justice Alito's wife, who's plainly making statements through her flags supporting that same notion that somehow the 2020 election was stolen. All of that suggests that they should not be on this case. They have basically denied any sort of not only appearance of impropriety, but any inappropriate animus or motive here. They should be off this case. They should not be deciding it. Absolutely.
And again, the shoe on the other foot thing, if you just envision for a moment what it would have looked like if one of the liberal justices' spouses had been engaged in this, I mean, it would be nonstop coverage on the right-wing media. Jim Santel, thank you for telling us all about it. Enjoy your holiday weekend.
Pat, you also, always a pleasure to be with you, and we will do just that to you and your listeners. Also, best wishes in America of 2024.
We're going to need it. Seriously, we're going to need it. The Brewers were winners yesterday. A hit batsman with the bases loaded is what did the trick. The Brewers and Rockies will continue their series. Pregame at 7:05 on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Racine, Kenosha, Park Falls, and Oshkosh. 7:40 is the first pitch as the Brewers hope to take yet another series and end what had been a rough stint at Coors Field. But no, it's not. What did you call it again with when you hit the batter and the base is loaded?
Grand bam.
A grand bam. There. It's a win is a win. We'll take it. We'll get started with our homeroom segment in just a second here. It is 7:34 on Up North News Radio. President Biden is scheduled to be in Madison for a rally this Friday, the White House confirmed yesterday. The rally is scheduled between 1:30 and 5 p.m. The location has not yet been announced. The president is also going to be doing a sit-down television interview with George Stephanopoulos of ABC News on Friday. More details still to come on the Madison appearance of President Biden. There was a legislative election yesterday in northern Milwaukee County. That's the area where longtime state senator Lena Taylor resigned after she became a Milwaukee County circuit judge. There were two state representatives vying for that state Senate seat, and the winner was State Representative Dora Drake, who won over Representative Lakeisha Myers. Now, this is only to serve out the rest of the current term, which the legislature is already out of session, and so the term lasts until January, but the real quote-unquote election will be this November for a full four-year term for that district where both Drake and Myers' names will be on the ballot, but Dora Drake will be running as the incumbent in that race. Let's turn our attention now to our homeroom segment, which is something that came out of just many conversations of me wanting to learn more about the complexities of school funding in our state. And I say this as somebody who served as a state legislator, as somebody who served as a reporter for many years covering this, and who I say this as somebody who has talked to plenty of people on the inside, who still have trouble explaining the school financing system in the state because it is borderline ridiculous. Part of it by nature of the beast. I would say part of it by intention as well. And I am so thankful to have two people who are so good at explaining these things that I actually thought we need to have a public education beat. And we do that now every Wednesday in this homeroom segment. And it's all because of Heather Dubois-Bourinon and Chris Hambuck-Boyle of the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Chris, Heather, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's so great to have you both here, and thank you again for all of your inspiration. We're going to get to the heart of all that. Rather than, you know, we talk about policy a lot, and we'll get into school funding and things like that. But I figured since I'm having a much more laid back show today, appreciating my, you know, continued, you know, screaming descent toward elderliness, that I would just, you know, have you guys on for a less formal conversation about why you're doing what you're doing, not just why you went into education, but education advocacy. Because as you know, there are plenty of people in any given field, education included, that when they're done, they're done. And the two of you are, along with others at the network, are absolutely tireless. Heather is executive director. We're going to start with you. What's your path to how you got to be where you are?
Oh, gosh, Pat.
Oh, got a big, heavy sigh. Like, I'm so tired.
I mean, so many reasons, but I do think the core of it is very similar to the reasons you do this show and the reasons you just kind of laid out, because there's so much going on and it's so confusing and it's so challenging for the average person to wrap their head around all of the ways that our kids need help and our public schools are in trouble and the state isn't meeting its obligation to our kids in so many significant ways. Well, what are those ways? What does that look like in our local schools? What can I do about it as a parent or a caregiver or somebody in my community who cares? And, you know, what's working and what's not, what's helpful and what's harmful. All of these are questions that we get every day from people who know something's wrong, but aren't exactly sure what it is and what to do about it. We need to cut past all that and make it simple. So that's kind of what keeps me motivated. And I got into this because, like so many other people in the state, I was just looking around and seeing just cut after cut and tightening of the belt across districts and wondering how, you know, we can't sustain this. Somebody's got to fight back. So I'm very grateful that I met folks like Chris who have been in this fight for a long, long time, doing the good work at the school board level and beyond, who kind of showed the ropes to the rest of us on how we can make our voice heard.
Chris, your hair is a little closer to silver than mine, but both of us had much darker hair back in the day when I was watching what you were doing with the Eau Claire School Board. But here you are. You're still here. Why?
I'm still here because I'm tied to spending that much time in the classroom working with children and families. In the public school system, I have seen the entire journey, and I need to stay in the fight until we make a difference. It's been a long slog. It's my profession that has taken a hit in this journey. It's my union that I am still a member of. So I'm just here because I think I feel better helping, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's a lot we can do with the future. And Chris, I'm gonna steal one of your answers, and you're gonna have to come up with another one now. When I say, you know, what else motivates you? You heard last week when we had Eau Claire DeLong Middle School student Raya Musavi on, who won the first ever Wisconsin Civics Bee. And I asked her what she might want to do in the future, and she talked about becoming a teacher. And I could just tell that gave you all the feels, didn't it?
Well, I listened to the whole segment, and your interview was amazing in the sense that you put what you called your nerdiness into all of this because of why you're involved.
Nerds rule, of course. Yes.
And in the end, when the statement was, what is the impact of what you just went through and what you studied for and what would you do? And they said, I want to be a teacher. I mean, that was profound for me because most people are going in the opposite direction. So I have hope, and I will keep that hope forever now because of your show.
Oh, thank you. Heather, what motivates you in that same way? And you know what? You know why I say it, because a lot of times it just feels like a battle. There's always a battle. There's another issue. There's another thing to advocate for. But some things have to serve as our motivators.
For me, it really is just the urgency of this. Kids don't get a second chance to be kids.
And we have kids in our schools right now who every single year when they go back to school, they have a little bit less. I want to see those kids have more. I want to see their needs get met now before it's too late. You know, the real world impacts of this and the stories that we hear, like the ones you share on your show by bringing folks in to tell them, I just think are so important. So every time we connect at that level and hear about a, you know, a student that's struggling or a teacher that's feeling frustrated or a school that is having to go without while their neighbors go with more because of the way the state budget hits them, it just moves me to try to do something about it, because I know that if we don't raise our collective voice, we're never going to fix this. And the other thing that I think is really motivating for me is just seeing how much dark money and influence is at play in this issue, and all of the ways that people who aren't motivated by these matters of the heart are kind of calling the shots and pulling the strings at the policy level. We need to reset that so that the balance of power leans toward people who really have the most to gain from a great public education, which are the people of this state and the students and the educators who are working so hard every year to get through and thrive.
I'm going to come back to you, Heather, for this question first. And it's about just a core level of support from our state legislature for public schools. There wouldn't have to be these kinds of battles. There wouldn't have to be this kind of angst if there were more of a consensus in the legislature to simply provide a core level of support. And we can debate where that core is, but I think we first need to get everybody on the same page that a core level of support is required. There is nobody demanding, you know, golden fountains in the lobby of every public school. And yet to hear some of its critics, you know, you'd think that that's what they're asking for, when really this is also unnecessary. If you provide a certain level of support that educates our children, we shouldn't have to have these kinds of fights.
No, we shouldn't be having this conversation at all. The fact that the state hasn't provided an inflationary increase in nearly 16 years for public schools, I think says it all. And the rhetoric around this is so out of tune with the reality for our districts. I mean, I look at the, you know, hundreds of districts that are going to referenda in recent years, and these are not build the Taj Mahal kind of referenda. These are do or die referenda. Keep the doors open, maintain the same level of staffing and services that we had last year, even though we know that that level wasn't enough, right? I mean, we aren't asking for the moon here. What we're asking for very literally is adequacy, aligning our aid with the need of our kids in a way that actually lets us meet those needs. That is not too much to ask. That is actually the bare bones minimum that a state should invest in its public schools. And the fact that we have to fight tooth and nail to try to get to that adequacy is a really sad, sad snapshot of what's going on in Wisconsin.
Chris, from a local standpoint, with a question similar to that is, look, we hear the politicians, many of them receiving all kinds of funds from the far right for various reasons and the way that they trash public schools. But Chris, I don't know that I'd say, I mean, obviously there are people in your neck of the woods who send their kids to private schools, but I don't think they necessarily have the hostile attitude toward the public schools in Eau Claire or around there. Or am I wrong? Is the divide deeper than maybe I would like to believe?
I don't think the divide is deeper. I think it's deception in the way that if we want to go the voucher route and have that conversation, since that's kind of where I really like to help the most, is that it's been a deception to the taxpayers because they don't actually even know they're funding private schools, given the legislature's decisions in Madison. So I don't want any disparity against private schools either. This pathway has been done through the legislature, through a biennium budgets without any debate, without any, without even the taxpayer knowing it, which I find to be a place where I want to have a voice. And I've done tons of knocking doors, deep canvassing in our area of Wisconsin, Pat, And I can honestly say most people don't, as Heather says, it's complicated, but most people don't even know the legislation.
And that's where I again come in as a former legislator and then as somebody who wanted to find the right topics to talk about. And the more I talked with you and, you know, before that as well, it is that whole public education, if you will, that I don't think taxpayers have any idea how they are now funding two separate school systems in the state. The voucher program is not some tiny experimental thing. Heather, it's become this beast, and I don't know that it would necessarily have that public level of support. Again, it's not a hostility toward private schools. Anybody can do that, but it's what the taxpayer is on the hook for that I think is so much at the heart of the accountability end of the Wisconsin Public Education Network, Michigan.
100%. And whatever people think about that voucher program, what we do know is that people do not think that it should be funded at the expense of children who are attending our public schools. Our Constitution requires us to provide an education in our public schools. It says nothing about funding private ones. And so if the state is going to do that, it has to do that on top of meeting the needs of kids in public schools, not in opposition to them. And so it's a manufactured tension. It's a tension that we didn't really have before. And we invite people to join us in learning more about what that means and how that works and what we can do about it. Our big annual event of the year is going to be July 30 to 31. It's in Madison this year, our summer summit. Check it out at wisconsinnetwork.org/summit. We invite everyone who's interested in learning more and getting involved in standing up for their local schools, telling their stories, and celebrating the great things that are going on there to join us and be part of this growing movement. And Pat, we thank you for all of the great storytelling that you've done in all of the many ways over the past year since we've been partnering with you in bringing these stories to life for people and helping connect the dots.
It's been my honor and pleasure to just play a role in of somewhat of everything that you guys do. Heather Dubois-Bourne on, Chris Hambuch-Boyle, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Todd Alba's next.
It's 2:45. There's no one in the place.
I know this sounds a little melancholy to be playing for a birthday, but it's just my favoriteest album. Frank Sinatra, Count Basie, Live at the Sands. And I've got a lot of upbeat music that I play, but I wanted to play something like this before I wrap things up today. Todd Alba is here as well. Mr. Alba, good morning.
Good morning. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
You know that's one of my favorite songs.
Say that again?
You know that's one of my favorite songs.
Is it really? No, really did not know that.
I have that. Well, I don't have the album The Sands, but I have. He did that song on one of his later albums again, and it was the last song that Bette Midler sang to Johnny Carson before he signed off after his illustrious career, and it was one of the best renditions ever.
Yes, it was without a doubt. You notice again a common theme here. Talk about, you know, the changes that happen to your body at a certain age, and one of the things you note, of course, is, you know, there's a reason why people in their 60s and 70s don't typically have, you know, chart-topping hits without auto-tune, is you don't have the pipes that you used to. But I'll tell you, all through my 30s and 40s, I would have loved to have sung this to a live piano at some point. You know. That would have been fun. I did karaoke one time. There is, and I was on vacation. I used to give this line, you know, there's not enough alcohol to get me to do karaoke. Well, it turned out one night in Jamaica, there was enough alcohol to make me do karaoke. And it was a Sinatra tune. And the look on Sherry's face and on my friend's faces was something I'll never forget. It was like, I didn't butcher the song. They kind of looked at it like, hey, you can do that. I'm like, well, yeah, with enough pina coladas, yes, I could be pretty respectable that way.
Did you remember what you sang?
It was it You Make Me? No, I've Got You Under My Skin. That was it.
Oh, that's a great tune.
Oh, yeah, because it's got this great big finish and, you know, you could hit all the notes there, and that would have been awesome. Are either of you like karaoke professionals or as wary as I am, Greg?
Well, Pat, I'm glad you brought this up. No, I'm not. I hate it. No, thank you. No, thank you.
It's right there with the chef testants on Top Chef.
Why?
Stay away. I'm putting the comparison up there that they are to you what Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time is to me. Things that are off limits.
Now you're just
unless we want to poke at each other.
Now you're just being hurtful because it's your birthday. Oh. Whatever. Yes.
It turns now to Todd with the same question about karaoke. What's your record? Your track record?
I've never done a lot of karaoke. I used to sing in choir. I don't have the voice I used to, but I did a lot of choir stuff in high school and college. But I've never done a lot of karaoke per se, like go to a club and sing. I don't know why, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like that frog in the old Bugs Bunny, you know, cartoon.
Michigan
where, you know,
J. Frog. Yeah, hello, exactly. My baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my
daughter, and then the curtain opens up, and I'm like, yeah.
Oh. You know, as I was listening back for segments that we were going to use for our weekend best of show, I have to say that I carefully thought about what I was going to say on Monday morning after the debate, when obviously President Biden had a weak performance, but I've also seen weak performances in other debates, and I decided to go with that particular rant. Or monologue, whatever you want to call it, as part of Saturday's show, because even all these days later, I still feel, you know, as strongly as I do. And I know that other people, it's not just political expediency or convenience. They sincerely believe, you know, that President Biden would be in trouble on this ballot. I just, A, I don't agree. And B, the chaos. Chaos isn't even the right word for what would happen if it looked like a sitting president was forced out, and especially if his vice president was either pushed aside or forced to audition for the job. Todd, that's a lot of theoretical, simple conversations. The reality is so much more complex.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, as a former Republican, I still think as we sit here today on July 3rd, Pat Crightlow's birthday, Joe Biden is the best person to take on Donald Trump. Now, will he come to a different decision on his own? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not in the higher echelons of the Democratic Party. But I do know this, and that is that no matter what the Democrats do, the alternative, whomever the Democrats, you know, put up, and I think it will be Joe Biden, is still a million times worse than what's on the Republican mega ballot, and that's Donald Trump. And, you know, whether you look at his Project 2025, in which now they're saying, you know, it will be a bloodless second revolution as long as, quote, the left allows it, unquote, threatening violence, whether it is the new information coming out now from 2016 connecting Donald Trump to Jeffrey Epstein, allegedly raping a 12-year-old girl with terrible, terrible, horrific details, whether it's the fact that Donald Trump has been saying homophobic, racist things, you know, black jobs, Latin jobs, what is that, you know? I mean,
oh, God, the black jobs comment from last week, holy cow.
I mean, so I guess the point is for me is it's still a very clear choice. An authoritarianism who will end democracy as we know it, the United States of America, and Donald Trump, or Joe Biden and the Democratic ticket. And I think that's what voters need to keep in mind.
I think they need to keep in mind, yes, ticket, team, whatever you want to call it. The toadies around Donald Trump are absolutely all bought in. This isn't like the first time that when he first served, and there were all these other voices, you know, urging caution and putting on guardrails. There would be no guardrails on the people that he has now surrounded himself with compared to the people who are, you know, surrounding the current administration and the actual work that they want to do on behalf of Americans. So that's the thing I wanted to take your temperature on as well. What do you do for the fourth and for the weekend?
We used to go to the farm and set off a bunch of fireworks. It was a terrible idea, but it was a lot of fun. Yesterday on the show, we invited people to call it your best fireworks story, because there was an article in crack.com on fireworks gone wrong, which was amazingly entertaining. And people called in and narrowly gave recipes for illegal homemade fireworks. And we kept having to say, don't do this at home. But it was enormously fun and entertaining. But you know, we used to do that on the farm. Now I don't have the farm. And so you know, I like to pause and reflect. I'm going to be down in Monroe, Wisconsin with my godsons and their family, and they have a beautiful 4th of July. And I think it's particularly important this year to remember how we started. And, you know, it did not start all that great. There was a lot of conflict, and oh my God, we had to be pragmatic, and we didn't get it right at first, and we're still trying to, but it's still the best country in the world, in my opinion, not because of any one person, but because of the collective us that is the melting pot of the United States of America.
Always the effort to form a more perfect union. Todd Alba, you can hear more at noon today. Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
Happy birthday, Pat. You are the Tom Cruise of radio.
Oh, Lordy.
Hail Zeno.
and Mr. Bach will be back with Matt and Air on Air. You have a great fourth and get rest. Enjoy the relaxation.
I will. Happy birthday, Pat.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day, a safe and fun weekend, and we'll see you back here for our next live show Monday morning at 6:00.